Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Red Men TV podcast for the final time this season. We're going to head into the breach. We're going to be talking about the win that saw Liverpool secure the Champions League places with a third place finish in the league, making you wonder what was the point of all the stress they put us through. And we're going to be talking about Gini Wijnaldum and the legacy that he leaves and our favourite Gini moments and memories before having a little bit of a look ahead to the summer transfers and all that good stuff, which I'm sure we'll be kicking into overdrive from like literally yesterday. It is myself and Chris Pajak in the studio from Team Coppish. We've got Callum Sanderson and we've got the wonderful Emma Sanders as well. Callum unfortunately didn't get the memo about wearing one of the Just Edit t-shirts. We'll make sure Callum gets one box the next time. But that's very cool. Right, we've got a kickoff question from Curtis Beggs at KurtyB86 on Twitter. Who would you rather pay money to watch a boxing match between on Sky Box Office? Very specific. Carragher versus Neville or Souness versus Keane? And the last caveat this, which I think probably tips the conversation slightly, all four being their current age. Chris Page.
I actually found it really tough because the first thing I was thinking is Souness versus Keane, but like Souness is quite a bit older than Roy Keane.
He's had major heart bypass surgery.
Yeah, it's not something that I'd particularly feel comfortable watching.
Yeah, a bit like when you watched the last fight in The Wrestler and you're like, it's not going to go well for me.
Yeah, but then I'm also thinking like Carragher and Neville, they're probably quite evenly matched. It's just going to be a points decision and I really don't get into boxing matches to watch 12 rounds. Mm. I want to watch 3 to 4 and a big heavy knockout and I just don't think either of them have got it in them to knock the other one out.
Really?
Yeah.
I think it's one of those, and I think it might end up on points, but I think it's one of those that would end up at 12 rounds. Oh my God, where they're both destroyed. And they're like, you know, there's bits hanging off them because of the what's at stake. I'm not sure either. It would be no quarter asked, none given, as the to use old school wrestling parlance. But go on, Emma, what would you be going for?
Yeah, I thought about this for like a ridiculous amount of time this morning. Like, it's quite embarrassing how much I thought about this. Yeah, I think like the age thing was interesting because I was thinking it would be quite fun actually to watch like Souness and Keane just sort of, it'd be like watching like your dads just in the boxing ring and it would just be like pretty hilarious. But ultimately it came down to the fact that the kind of the build-up stuff on social media and the reaction to it would be loads more entertaining between Neville and Carragher. So
yeah,
that's why I'm going for them.
There would be, I mean, the two men closer to the primes, of course, aren't they, Callum? So I think there's definitely a bit more longevity in that. And again, slightly less uncomfortable as watching Graham Souness do, because Graham Souness would not bow. He would not act as though he's a much older gentleman with a dodgy ticker. He would probably go full at it. God, so what do you reckon?
When I first saw the question, until I saw the bit of them being at their current ages, I'd have gone Keane and Souness. And I think with Souness, he strikes me as the sort of guy who, as you said, he'll keep going till the final bell. But Keane's dangerous because he just strikes me as a man who's got nothing to lose. He doesn't love anything, does he? And that's a dangerous man to get in a ring with, in my opinion. But current ages, it's got to be Carragher and Neville. Plus, the reason I'd want to see it as well, because Carragher does a bit of boxing training with Bellew, and it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world seeing a second round knockout of Gary Neville just once. Just once.
I think Carragher's got a knockout in him. Like, yeah, they both keep themselves in reasonable trim, don't they? You know, Carragher does a lot of running and stuff like. But yeah, I think Carragher did.
I think Carragher would take him.
I think Carragher would batter Neville, if I'm being perfectly honest, just because I don't think he could allow that the opposite to happen. The only way it is like if he goes too much, you know, like you go too hard and you break something and then you're on the back foot.
Thinking, like, wouldn't it be more fun, not a tag team match, but like all four of them in the ring, but you...
So fatal four-way.
Yeah, so basically what you're saying to them is like, look, Souness, I'm going to try and get rid of Neville as early as possible and then we can both be keen up.
Yeah.
Because that would be the most fun thing to watch, wouldn't it?
I think if we're going to do dream matches, I think a Prime of the Lives thing would be a fascinating... Because I don't think a tag team of Souness and Carragher I think they would make short work of Neville and Keane. Because Keane, like, again, Keane would be... Gary Neville would be healthier. But it was not like... I don't associate him with being anything, really. You know what I mean? Maybe, I mean, look, he'll have been beating Phil up his whole life and thinking he's dead hard because you're meant to beat up your little brother, aren't you? So maybe that leads him into a false sense. But Carragher, from the mean streets of Bootle, Graham Souness would jaw people just for looking at him the wrong way on the field. Keane would give it plenty, but he also comes from, you know, when football started to soften as well, so he looked like a hard man in a game that had a lot of the edges sanded off it. So Graham Souness, I think at prime of their careers, I think Souness would probably take them all.
Yeah.
With a full perm and moustache as well. You know what I mean? People are going and going,
shorts.
Yeah, oh God, yeah. Just the tips of his bollocks hanging out, like, you know what I mean? Just to really put people off. He would. And then he'd plant a flag in their faces when he was done. Yeah, definitely. Good question, Curtis. Thank you so much for that. Right, well, we're going to be talking about the end of the season. We're going to be talking about our farewell to Jeannie Wijnaldum. If you've got any comments or well wishes for Jeannie, let us know them in the comments and I'll get through some later on. And we're going to talk about the summer ahead. But before we do, speaking of the summer ahead, we have got a phenomenal documentary series coming very soon for you guys. Teaser 2 we dropped at the weekend. If you haven't seen it yet, check it out. And if you've seen it already, watch it again because it's genuinely amazing. Here it is.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, welcome back. Yes, I can't.
That smile.
Yeah, that smile. Just Stephen Gerrard. When we got that footage dropped in, so like Rangers were good enough to record that for us. And we got that in and we had an idea of what we wanted that teaser to look like. And then when we saw the footage, it was like... yeah, great stuff. Obviously, do perfect time to sign up on the redmentv.com now. We're on the countdown to episode 1 of Hendo, 10 Years of Red. There'll be more to come in the coming days and weeks, teasing. I mean, that's just the tip of the iceberg. There's some pretty impressive people, even I have to say. But there's loads, just so much more that you guys haven't even got your heads around just yet. So, yeah, do sign up now. We've had Devraj Singh has joined us as a first teamer here on YouTube. Thank you so much, Devraj. And Sai Banstead sends us super chat in saying, how are the muscles after yesterday's kick about at Anfield? Not good.
No, not good. The head's still not good either from Sunday.
Well, a Saturday and Friday.
Well, yeah, it was 3 days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Chris, the 38-year-old man, went on a 3-day bender and then ended it by playing on the pitch at Anfield. I should do. Rock and roll. Fair play. Absolutely. Live life while you've got it. So yeah, good fun. You can see a little some of the clips from that of me and Chris very slowly going through the motions on the Anfield turf on our Instagram account right now. But yeah, great. Thank you so much to Simon Banstead for the super chat. Right, yes, let's dive into it then. The season is
you
done.
You literally dropped something on the floor before and went, oh no, as you went down to get
it. Do you know what it was? I bought ibuprofen joint relief, right? And then got one out of the packet and dropped it on the floor.
Wow.
Yeah, that was
Oh no.
Oh God. Oh my God, yeah, horrendous. Right, so the season is over, Chris Pajak.
Finally.
Yeah, it's Thankfully. Done. No, and it was, and there was a point, what's really interesting about it is I think there was a point about a month ago where I just wanted it over. I didn't care. I figured the season was going to be an absolute write-off. It was an absolute disaster. I'd mentally prepared myself for the Europa and the conference or no, whatever. I just wanted it done because it's just been crap.
It was hurting,
yeah,
wasn't it?
Yeah, it was just painful. And now it's done and Liverpool have met the minimum objectives for the season. There was just a palpable sense of relief more than anything else.
Yeah, it was. And I think, you know, for Liverpool and for all of us watching, we knew how important the end of the season could be. And, you know, because you know, you don't make it into the Champions League and you don't know how long you're going to be put back for. These are things that clubs take a while to recover from. As we've seen, you know, your Manchester United, your Arsenal, once you stop getting that top four, it starts to become so difficult to get back into it. And, you know, I think a lot of people had a lot of faith in Jurgen Klopp and his side and stuff like that. And I was very much waning. I was like, I can't, you know, I shouldn't have wrote them off. But equally, they never showed me anything that they were going to change it. And then all of a sudden, they went from being one of the worst sides in the league to literally the best side in the league in the last 10 games by playing Nat Phillips and Reece Williams at the back. And you're thinking to yourself, how have they done this? It's like pulling a rabbit out of a hat, isn't it? Like, you know what I mean? And it's sick. And then you get back into the ground as well. We're lucky enough, obviously, to go to the game. And all I wanted was just more season to actually happen.
Yeah.
Because it's so much different being able to be back in the ground and enjoy that. And just, it was one of them where you, in years gone by, you will talk about that day. Like, you know, you were lucky enough to be there, but you saw Anfield in a different way that I've never seen it with that few people in before and got to experience it. And in the end, you know, I got to say my goodbyes to that Liverpool side and Gini Wijnaldum.
Yeah, which we'll definitely come on to. I thought it was really interesting talking to a couple of people after the fact. And I was talking to Ben and Errol afterwards, and they were saying, like, the first questions they were asking me was like, were you nervous? What was the atmosphere a bit flat and blah, blah, blah? And I realised that I've not been at the face of the differences between being in the ground and watching it at home in so long that I'd forgotten it's a thing. And it was mad. I don't know what your experience was like watching it, but what I'm gathering is a lot of the coverage is around like the table as it stands. So there was like a lot of like, and now Liverpool are outside the top four as it stands because of blah, 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 which I thought was dead funny because I got nothing but with the exception of that Townsend chance, I was so relaxed for the whole game. But I get the feeling that the coverage kind of put people through the ringer a little bit.
Yeah, so I was doing the live text for the website, so I was watching five games at once. There was two of us across the 10 games, but my focus was mainly kind of on, well, obviously it was on Liverpool, but then I had sort of the West Ham Tottenham about whether or not they were going to kind of get Europa League. And then obviously we were keeping an eye on Leicester Chelsea. So it was very much this team's out of the top four, this team's in. And actually, for me, it was more trying to figure out at what point Liverpool were third, because obviously it was like sort of on goal difference at loads of different points. So basically, I think before Liverpool went 1-0 up, they went from fifth to third to fourth to fifth, I think within the space of about 20 minutes. And then obviously when I think pretty much from when Liverpool scored, it was like Liverpool, I don't think, dropped out of they didn't drop out of the top four, but it was pretty much plain sailing from then. But it was very, like, I guess, like for you guys being in there, your only focus is on that one game. But so when Chelsea got one back against Villa, and then obviously Leicester went down to Spurs, I think that was kind of when I knew the moment was that I think Liverpool was safe. But up until that point, it was you know, an equaliser at Anfield could have changed everything. So, that kind of put everything into a little bit of perspective. But no, I think it was just that I don't think, like, from me watching it, at no point did I think that once Liverpool went ahead that they were getting out of the top four. Like, it just looked like they'd gone there to do the job, and they were getting it done. It was just a case of whether or not they were going to finish third or fourth. So to actually finish third at the end of the season is just absolutely
What was your experience like on the day, Callum?
Yeah, it was a weird one. Up until the Townsend mischance, I was thinking, we haven't surely got ourselves back into a top four contention. They're never going to bottle it on the last day in front of fans at Anfield. Surely we're not going to do that. They just won't put us through that anymore. We've gone through those days. They won't do that to us again. And once that chance was missed, in a weird way, I just felt, right, that's it. Palace have missed their big chance. We've got this now. But yeah, as you said, it was a case of sort of seeing the other games and seeing how they were playing out. And you're just thinking, all we need to do is just get one goal. Once we get one goal, I don't care what happens in the other games, because I know we'll hang on and we'll get more goals. We'll lift in confidence. The crowd will get behind the players. So as soon as that Mane shot went in, I was just like, yeah, we've done it. And then it was a case of, right, where do we finish? Do we finish third? Do we finish fourth? But I was more than content and relaxed in that game.
It was, you know, Cal, it was, we've seen that game loads now. You know, if you had to watch back our final 10 games of the season, it was this game over and over again, except we just scored the goals without too much fuss. But yeah, it was that, wasn't it? The second Mane scores, and again, it was true in the ground as well. I think the levels of relief depend on how much you've been hyped up over it. For me, it felt like an inevitability. So it was just like, oh, we've done it. Now we've done it. It was great. And there was a big let off and stuff. But yeah, to your point earlier, it was hard to imagine a world where Liverpool had got themselves into this situation, got themselves in front of fans, where we weren't actually going to do the business on the day.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, I thought top four was sort of, I didn't want to say it out loud, but I thought top four was wrapped up when Big Ali went up and scored that header. Like, things like that don't happen for you to finish fifth. It doesn't happen. That's a movie story script. That God's not going to let that happen. No, there's a reason it happened. So when he scored that goal, I just like...
Not for after his favourite fellas just scored. Like.
Yeah, exactly. So when he scored that, I was just like, yeah, we're good now. We're never going to see anything like that again. That's solidified us top four. I knew the Burnley game was going to start off tough, but I thought we'd grind them out, and we did. And the Palace game at home in front of fans, Palace coming to Anfield for the first time with fans after the year and however long we've had no fans, I just knew it was going to happen.
Yeah, it was just...
Do you know what it was for me? Like, I think naturally, when it comes to footy, I'm quite optimistic. I'm not as optimistic as you are, and I think that's plain for everybody who's ever watched Red Men, because I always lose my head first. But I also need the support of the fans, because it's funny, because when you're in here or you're on Twitter or something like that, I always feel like there's not many optimists on Twitter or anything like that. But when you're in the ground, you're just one of 10,000 people who pretty much think the same way.
Yeah.
And that's what I got through from it. And I think that's what I've learned most from this season is I need that support of the other optimists around me to keep me there with them and like buoying each other.
Well, we made a joke this last week about the how am I supposed to feel about this? And the being in a crowd tells you how you're meant to feel about it. You know, sometimes subtly is that we got the first example of someone did something a bit shit. I can't remember what it was, but it was like, everyone's, oh, and they went, oh, yeah. And you turn yourself around and you start clapping and you start supporting the person.
And that happened time and time again. It happened with Gini Wijnaldum during the day. It happened with Mane when he big support shot. It happened with Nat Phillips, I think, was that the Andros Townsend chance?
Where Nat Phillips goes flying in. The Williams header as well.
The Williams header. Yeah. That's what it is. It's that, but no. Right, oh fuck. No, come on, sing the name. Get behind the lads. This is what you're supposed to do. And that's what they've missed, because that holds them to account. And then, they believe in me. They believe in me even when I've done something shit. So that's enough for me.
And the way this team plays and the way it's constructed, because people get, we need a finisher. We need a finisher. We've always needed a finisher. There's no team that doesn't need a finisher, but we've those lads have scored loads more goals than they've scored, you know, this season individually, with the exception of Mo Salah. The way Liverpool are built is that another chance will come and you will take that one. But when you don't have that roar of support behind you, the belief is much more easily eroded. Whereas, you know, that was about the feeling of inevitability. We were playing well. You know, Emma referenced it. Reece Williams has that big header over the bar. We had a couple of decent, really, really good chances. In fact, we score probably the least. We score the scrappiest of them because there is just that sense that it's coming, because there's a build and support, and there's just a building sense that, yeah, we're on the right path to this. The one thing that I came back, which I didn't miss, and I'd forgotten that I have to stop myself with this, of people getting annoyed when we pass it out around the back. Like, there's a couple of hairy moments, and there is, you can't help it, your natural reaction is to tense up when the goalie's playing it around in tight situations. But the amount of times, Emma, where we'd play it around and eventually someone would just spring someone with a wonderful little interchange of passes, but I did have to nearly stop myself from going, oh my fucking God, it's how we play. This is how we play football. You can't be like, no, just kick. You're waiting for the first shelter. Just kick it long. No, don't just kick it long. We've not come this far to just totally throw it away. No, it was, yeah, they're the rough with the smooth kind of things.
Yeah, but that's such a good example, because I commented on this on the live text that just like I got a little bit emotional during like You Never Walk Alone, just because I could see the players smiling, and like Jurgen Klopp had the biggest smile on his face, and it was like the players were playing with that freedom, and it was almost like the pressure was off, even though there was 10,000 people in there watching them.
Yeah.
Like, do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's like going on a stage in front of 10,000 people, but that's what they're used to. Mm. So to them, that's their comfort zone.
The
sort of passing around the back was normal.
Yeah. It was the stuff there, Emma, like when the players first walked out to warm up, there was just this primal roar that went across the ground, like 10,000 people. You never know. It was, you know, if it was 55, I'd it would be the noise. So I'll never be able to truly put them side by side. But like, I've missed that. I've missed noise. You know what I mean? And I found it actually quite draining. I was absolutely wiped out by the time I got back in. Like, yeah. I think it was a bit much, like, but that was the thing. Callum, it's a weird day in the end. Because I find it a bit bittersweet for a number of reasons. And I think the problem is it reminded me very much of us beating Middlesbrough in 2017. I remember we did a live show that night. So we finished, we did our post-match videos, and we did a live show, and it was a really good laugh, but it wasn't like, I was going to say it wasn't dancing on the tables. It was for some people, sheltered after that. But it was fine.
We got thrown out of our own live show.
Yeah, it was a good, I think it's one of them where we got over the line. There was a great sense of relief, and there was celebration, absolutely. But for me, anyway, it was a little bit like, again, we just needed to get to this point. Just needed to do this. It became a massive box ticking exercise with more to it than that. You know, Jurgen Klopp talking about it being a bit one of the biggest achievements he's had because of all those things. But it was what we were playing for, really, was the ability to relax this summer. I think more than anything, to be truly celebrated.
Yeah, no, I agree. And this is, I mean, out of the seasons Klopp's been here, very rarely do we play a game on the last day of the season that means nothing. It's just the way it is with Jurgen. But it's not the worst thing in the world. Going into this season, if you'd said to me, right, all you're going to do is finish third and you're not going to win any trophies or compete for any trophies, I'd have probably said a lot of words that would have got me kicked off a stream. But yes, when you actually look at what's happened, I'll be honest, and maybe I'm being a bit flippant or just being a bit reactionary, I actually think this may go down as one of Klopp's biggest achievements, because I look at his last season at Borussia Dortmund, and it was very similar to this. He was ravaged with injuries, and the team couldn't get any form, and they were losing games they shouldn't have been losing after being so dominant, and they didn't really turn it around, and didn't finish in the Champions League, they finished in Europa. Whereas we have turned it around. We have finished in the Champions League. And dare I say, I don't think Jurgen Klopp can go through a worse season than what he's gone through this season with professionally and personally. So for him to go through that, and for us as a club and as a team to come through on the other side, I actually think it's going to galvanise us, and I think it's going to make us a more difficult proposition for other teams next season.
Yeah, I agree on that. You know, Liverpool, the battle became to not have us be the story of the season, to not have us be like a laughing stock, to not totally and utterly undo all the work that had been done up to this point, Chris. And that's why it is. I mean, again, I'm sure the players had a great laugh tonight. I know you had a good laugh going out and all that. Me and Ben were talking about this. It's like, the relief was so exhausting. I feel like I've been holding my breath for the last half a season because of like you're like, well, what happens next? What comes next? How are you meant to attract players? What does that mean for the players who were there? What does it mean for your season next year when you're playing Thursday, Sunday, blah, blah, blah? All those negative strands that you were going to be taking into the summer just got lopped off in the last, well, three games, but on the back of a 10-game run. The thing me and Ben were saying is like, the Euros, I get to just watch the Euros because I enjoy football. We're relaxed and enjoy some no strings attached football without having to think about what, you know, the overriding depression of your football club's fucking falling off a cliff.
Yeah, and I think the other thing that Jürgen's shown us with this side over the last sort of 10 weeks is that, you know, we were laughing and joking about how easy it was to win points off Liverpool. Well, everyone tried the same technique that had been working all season long, and it stopped working.
Yeah.
And Liverpool started to get those results. And, you know, but for a couple of late draws, we would have had an almost perfect run towards the end of the year. And that shows me that this side still plays on the edge, still plays well under pressure when it needs to, still can pull a result out of a bag when it needs to, and never, ever gives up. And I think there's clear players there that have improved. You know, so you might look at this season and go, is Curtis Jones going to be further on in his development? I think he is. Mm-hmm. You know, he's going to be closer to be stepping up into that midfield slot for next season. I don't think it'll be next year, by the way. But Rhys Williams, Nath Phillips, they've all shown us that we've actually got a better squad than we thought, even with just those two lads. Yeah. The fact that the way that they've played, even with their sort of ceilings being where they are, you know what I mean? And it doesn't matter. And yet somehow Salah, Mane even towards the end of the season, Bobby Firmino, they turned it round from that point where they looked really like the three of them were just absolutely terrible together, but they turned it round.
Exactly, I think that's absolutely spot on. And Emma, that's the point, isn't it? Is that, you know, prior to this run of results, and probably a little bit early into it, because we still didn't realise what we were in the midst of, probably until about halfway through that last run. The Bobby Firmino stuff is Bobby Firmino. Is it time for him to move on? Is it time for Mane to move on? Thiago Alcantara hadn't hit the heights for us. Is Nath Phillips good enough to play for Liverpool? Is Reece Williams good enough to play for us? Or Trent Alexander-Arnold?
Can I also score a header?
Yeah, absolutely.
All questions that got answered.
Yeah, absolutely. But and that's the point. Nath Phillips has ended up making himself, you know, give him the keys to the city as far as I'm concerned, but he's got the freedom.
Just take him away. Bang.
Oh no, wait. Oh no, wait, Sal, sorry. No, can I get them back? Yeah, just pass them to us. Like he's made himself what, £15 million? Probably centre half, £20 million, you know what I mean? He's made himself good enough to be in the Liverpool squad for next season. Reece Williams has done, you know, if he goes out on loan next season, he sure as shit won't be going to the conference. He'll be going to a Championship or Premier League team if he is. Mane's fans, all of these things that we were probably going to be talking about and they were going to be big inquests over the summer are now complete non-issues.
Yeah, and I think, like, I absolutely agree with Chris. I think he's hit the nail on the head. And I'm actually, while Chris was talking then, I was thinking of each season under Klopp, and there's kind of, for me, a big thing of Klopp's kind of managerial sort of coaching that's kind of come out of each season. You know, the first one, it was, can he attract players? And then the second one, it was like, can he get over the line and get into finals and win silverware? Can he win as a league title? He's ticked all those boxes. And then this year it was very much like, can he get the players to adapt? And so, like, when I look at this season, it's the ability to adapt that jumps out for me. He's improved players along the way, but not only that, it's people were questioning, saying, you know, I look back at 2 or 3 years ago, it was, oh, Liverpool are just a counter-attacking team. You don't look at this Liverpool team now and go, oh, they're just a counter-attacking team. Like, hell no. Like, they can play, you know, 3, 4, 5 different ways because they've learned to adapt. And like you say, individually, he's made players better. So for me, that's what jumps out of this season is just that, yeah, the fact that they've had to change and get used to so many different situations and formations and personnel, and those individuals have improved throughout the season. And those last 10 games, 8 wins and 2 draws, that just shows. And like you say, every single player, including the big players as well, adapted. The fact that Mane and Firmino finished the season strongly, I think, says it all.
We start the season in title winning form and we ended in title winning form, and then ultimately it depends on how you're looking to feel about these things, Carl. And I as a glass half full person, I tend to look at that as a positive, given the context of the season. Because if you've got no mitigating circumstances, that's just saying, well, you can't put a full season together. But it says, you know, again, when you're looking for what to take into the summer, when you're looking what to be positive about, when you're starting to look ahead to next season, it says that it was Liverpool having to drag themselves out of a mire and being able to drag themselves out. You know, Chris mentioned that there was a template of how to beat Liverpool, and we didn't think we would be able to work it out. But we forget, you know, and we've forgotten that, you know, the whole smartest men in the room thing. We forget how many football and, you know, and analytical geniuses there are behind the scenes, and the fact that Jurgen Klopp is just incredible, and all the things that he's fostered in terms of squad mentality and stuff along the way, that we were always going to turn it round, if you take my meaning on that. But we can say that now because we get to look back over the 4 years that led up to this and say, this was everything that happened was the same, can be linked back, as opposed to this season, which very much looked like it was the, we were talking about, is this the end of this side? Does this side need this mantle? Does it need major surgery? Blah, blah, blah. We might still have those conversations, but to think that the idea that every element of Liverpool Football Club is shite all of a sudden was a bit of an exaggeration fed by the circumstances.
Definitely. And I think a lot of the times people neglect to differentiate between form and just a situation. Players can go through bad form, which unfortunately to us kind of have, all the players went through a bad patch of form all at the same time, which is very unlikely to happen, on top of it being a COVID season, on top of all the injuries, on top of everything else that happened. So I think people sort of just looked at the results and said, all right, Liverpool are done, one season wonder, flash in the pan. Whereas without adding any context to what was actually going on. And that was probably the most frustrating thing. I think Emma hit the nail on the head. Everyone depicts us as just being this heavy metal team. We haven't been a heavy metal team for a little while now. We've become more possession-based and we're actually able to switch up how we play. For example, Atalanta away, we played counter-attacking and beat them 5-0.
Yeah.
In the season, we started using Van Dijk to use long balls out to our fullbacks and our wingers to negate the press of the midfield. And then you look at other games such as Chelsea at the beginning of the season, where we played a more possession-based style. So Jurgen Klopp has built a team that can wear many different hats, but he's not been able to allow the team to wear those hats this season because of injuries and because of bad form and lack of personnel. I don't think Liverpool needs major surgery. And to be honest, if we need major surgery, then I fear for the rest of the league, because if we just had our worst season and we finished third, everyone calls us worst champions, even though we finished with less points behind Man City than they did the previous season to us.
Yeah.
And I fear for the rest of the league if we need major surgery. So I think people need to look at context. People need to look at what's actually happened and be objective in how they actually depict how our season's gone.
I mean, Chelsea, Santiago Silva, Reece Williams and Nat Phillips finished ahead of them. Tottenham have Alderweireld and Davinson Sanchez, Reece Williams and Nat Phillips finished ahead of them in the league table. It's actually ridiculous when you say Thiago Silva was brought in to shore up that defence, and it looked like they were shoring it up at one stage and we finished above them.
No, absolutely. You know, and even the worst case scenario is all of their next choice of centre-halves are all super Premier League experienced lads.
Yeah, like Christensen and Zouma on the bench at the weekend in Chelsea.
Yeah.
It would be the ones below them that they were bringing in. That's what Liverpool did.
Absolutely. It's insane. It's insane to see, think here. That photo of Nat Phillips and Reece Williams arm in arm, both with the big cuts over their eyes and the black eyes, and they're like, you know, Nat looks like he might just be holding back a tear, and Reece Williams is just like starry-eyed looking at the world. And there's never been a more perfect picture that sums up the season, because, you know, there's loads of things, and we'll be doing season reviews over on the RedmenTV.com. Gogcom this afternoon, which we're going out there over the next week or so. And we're going to be talking about the various players and performances and games of the season. But like, Thiago being boss at the end is great. Yeah. You know, Salah doing another Salah season, Alisson's headers and Trent Alexander-Arnold and all these superstars. You might as well, you can talk about them and they'll always be talked about, but it's Nat Phillips and Reece Williams. And I feel a bit sorry for Ozan Kabak because he got injured at the wrong time. But those two lads and that picture, that's like, they may never kick a ball again for Liverpool, but this season will be their season.
They left it all on the line, didn't they? Like, if someone could Photoshop them into some kind of army uniform and put them on the beaches of Normandy and dull the photo down a touch, that's kind of what it reminded me of. It's like they'd literally just gone to war for something that they believed in, and they've come out and they've friggin' done it. Like, it's a glorious photo, to be fair.
It's just wonderful. It sums up everything you love about them, everything I love about football and all that. Like, I mean, and just to on Callum's point, Emma, you know, in terms of the team, you know what needs to be done, and we're going to do that this after we do the Genie stuff, of course, to expand on transfers. But in terms of that, like you say, in terms of that rebuild stuff, imagine if, I think it was worked out, is it less than 10 minutes of the season we actually had? In fact, I don't think we had our best team out at any point this season, because I've got a feeling that even Adrian started at Goodison. So we started our best midfield, and they play, and we had so Fabinho, Henderson, Thiago, and then Van Dijk gets injured inside the first 10 minutes, doesn't he? So Fabinho goes to set, does Fabinho get shifted or whatever? We end up with, we've got Alisson in that game. It's just mad. Like, I would just give anything to see we never played our strongest team at any point during that season, at no point during it.
We did, we played against Palace.
big reason that.
That's for the, no, it's a really good point, because it's like, obviously we brought Thiago in the summer, and he was, you know, the big signing essentially to take us kind of from being, you know, the Premier League, you know, quite comfortably the Premier League winners, to then being hopefully a team that was going to defend that title. And unfortunately, you know, Liverpool just never had that opportunity, but We only saw the best of him when Fabinho was playing in midfield. So that makes me so excited that we've got the best, in my opinion. You know, he was the best midfielder in the world when he came from Bayern. So you know, we've got that to look, apart from KDB. So we got that to look forward to next season. Is the best of Thiago alongside the best of Fabinho,
and hopefully inside our captain as well.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just like, that in itself is something to look forward to, because we've not seen that. And Joe Gomez as well was coming, you know, that season, last season was his best season. That was his peak season. So he's only going to get better. So, I mean, there's talk of this rebuild, and it's like, look, you look at the forwards, and some people might say, you know, they might want to move on, or I don't know, there's some players who were starting to age, like Henderson in midfield, etc. But I mean, there's so many young world-class players in that side. Like, Jota's like, what, 24? Trent is still basically 8. So it's like, come on, guys. We've got loads to look forward to.
Completely agree. One player who won't be with us on the journey moving forward is Gini Wijnaldum. Obviously played his last game for Liverpool, got an amazing send-off.
Maybe. I don't want it to end just yet. Can we just say right now it's a maybe still?
Yeah, until he officially signs with someone else. Yeah.
I'm not ready to deal with it just yet.
Yeah, I know. It was just great to see. You know, obviously they honoured the kit man, and they had the guard of honour for him. It was just great because, again, it shows you what matters to Liverpool. Like, Roy Hodgson got a bottle of wine off Jurgen Klopp pre-match, and it wasn't really publicised in any way. But, like, you know, the kit man gets a send-off. And Gini Wijnaldum, you know, for he's just a player. Players come and players go in squads. But I think it showed that Nick Chris, and we'll talk about our own personal feelings and memories on Gini in a sec, but I think it shows you how much he means to Jurgen, how much he means to Liverpool, and how much he means to all the players.
Yeah, and it's the way it's the way he went about it as well, isn't it? I mean, everybody knows he's had the problems with trying to get a contract sorted and that he wanted to stay at Liverpool and he couldn't get the deal. And he didn't take any pressure and put it and apply it to the team in any way. He didn't speak about it until it was all over and done with. And that's a testament to the man that he is, isn't it? You know, he wanted the focus to be on get Liverpool into the top four. And I've seen some absolute horrendous takes on social media over the last few weeks about Genie Wijnaldum. And I don't think he was playing his best football, by the way. But I also realise now that, you know, when you see him in the flesh, and I said this all along, when you see him in Anfield, he's a different player. Like, you know, I don't know what everyone else thought of his performance at the weekend. I thought he was everywhere, covered every blade of grass. And he's one of that leadership group. And he's, for me, and you'll have heard me say this 1,000 times during the game, he's the first one of the best side that I've ever seen with my own two eyes that's about to leave. So it's the beginning of the end, and that makes me really sad. And I know it's a mile away from the end because, you know, Trent could be here for 15 years or whatever when the last remnants of this side go. But he's the first one, and that's painful for me.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And Callum, there's no other way to slice it. He's been integral, he doesn't consistently grab the headlines. And this is the thing, I've seen a lot of people reference like Ronnie Whelan from the 80s, and Ronnie Whelan's not John Barnes. And he's not Jan Molby, and he's not Ian Rush, you know. And so he's not the guy who does all the stuff all the time. And we damn,
he's the glue though, isn't he?
Yeah, exactly. We damn with faint praise a lot when we talk about, like, as though being available, like, oh great, he's available, like it's a participation award. I mean, it's not just that. If I could understand criticism from people who don't really, you know, really get into footy, I guess, if he didn't have any highlights. But he's got loads of highlights. He's there. If you look at a big Liverpool performance, Genie Wijnaldum is right there.
Perfectly put. I can't think of a big game Genie's played in for Liverpool where I thought, oh, what a letdown Genie's been today. Not one. And we've played some massive games since he's been here. And he's been integral right from his first season, right up until his last season. I think Genie's a victim of the stat-only community where people just look at stats and think, oh, well, he's sent up in field and Liverpool can't see, he only scores a couple of goals a season. You have to look at Genie with the eye test. And if you want to see how good he is in front of goal or how devastating he can be, go and watch him play for Holland and he'll show you. He's clearly playing in a system whereby his job is to recycle the ball primarily. Now, again, don't get me wrong, there's times where I get frustrated because he turns back instead of playing that killer pass or trying to play that killer pass. But you know what? It is what it is. I'll take that rather than a player who's unreliable or play regularly. Everyone talks about your Naby Keitas and your Oxes, and for as great as their talent is, Genie is always available. Like, again, how often do we go into a season and think, Genie might be injured for half of the season, what are we going to do? He plays pretty much every single game, and his replacements are at the club. Keita and Ox are at the club, but they've not shown it, unfortunately, down to injuries and circumstances, and he's still stepped up and done it. I think it's a shame a lot of the fan base has kind of turned against him when none of us know the true story of what's happened behind the scenes. Again, he's not played his best football this season, but he's been relied upon when called, and he, for me, leaves the club with his head held high, and there should be no bad words spoken about Genie Wijnaldum, in my personal opinion.
Unless you're the club doctor, because Genie never learned his name. Never needed to.
Just another person he'd randomly say hello to in the corridor. I was like, hiya, mate. Yeah, so, Emma, yeah, I mean, Genie Wijnaldum, his smile would light up Anfield, but he also had, you know, he had so many memories, so many moments. It's mad that we're even having to have a conversation. If I'd not looked on social media, I wouldn't even need to feel the need to justify my positivity towards Genie Wijnaldum because, yeah. Like, yes, he didn't play 10 out of 10 every week. No one does. Nobody does. But what you got, it's consistency is a very, very underrated trait in a football team. And our eyes are naturally drawn sometimes to the guys who burn, you know, shortly but brightly. But, you know, again, Genie Wijnaldum actually had plenty of both as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, and if you look at it from a purely investment point of view, you know, got him from a relegated side, and he's improved every single year. So, you know, in terms of from a purely like sort of business point of view, we've absolutely made a huge profit in terms of what he's given back. You know, he leaves as a European champion, he leaves as a world champion, he leaves as a Premier League champion. He literally could not have won anything more with Liverpool other than the Carabao Cup, which no one gives a shit about. So he's basically ticks every single box. Consistency, massive. But I think for me, and you said this right at the beginning there, it's the personality, and it's the kind of the character that leaves, that I think will be the biggest miss. But for me personally, and I remember on Sunday when we were in the office, and someone shouted over, and they were a freelancer, and they said, Ronaldo's captain today. And I said, yeah, but that's not a token captaincy. That's because he is genuinely the captain on the pitch today. And they were almost like a bit surprised. They were like, oh, really? And I was like, yeah, yeah. Like, he's one of the longest serving, you know, when Milner, when Van Dijk isn't there, you know, he is captain. And it was almost like a kind of, I think that goes unnoticed as well, is that he's such an important part of that dressing room from a personality point of view, as well as the fact that he's just an ever-present. Mm-hmm.
And he's one of them, which tells you all you need to know about his standing in the squad.
Yep.
And I tell you what, I haven't seen any of the social media stuff really of the hate on Genie, other than a few bits in the warm up to the game. But when you were in the ground, there is not one person there the other day that didn't think the absolute world of Genie Wijnaldum, and his song got sung so many times during the game, and I'm glad that he got to experience that before the season ended. Then he left Liverpool because he'll know what we really think of him.
I felt sorry for Adam Lallana last season, you know, not being able to get that kind of send-off, because he's another one. And I actually don't think he was anywhere near as integral as Genie Wijnaldum's been to that stuff. It's funny because I was looking into it, and in terms of like the, you know, the output, as I think Callum mentioned, like the stats thing, and stats are so misleading for various positions. Like, people remember Andres Iniesta and Xavi, you know, as being the best midfielders in the world, but none of them didn't get loads of goals and loads of assists because the front three scored all the goals for Barcelona. And I was looking in terms of context, in terms of the great Dutch midfielders, like Edgar Davids, an out and out holding midfielder, doesn't score goals. He's tiny, doesn't score goals. Clarence Seedorf scored more goals than Genie, but also played as a more of a 10, more
so
of an attacker.
Mid- yeah,
exactly. You know, Genie Wijnaldum, my point on this is that, but he's comparable to both of them, as far as I'm concerned, in terms of now his, you know, the bits and pieces of silverware he's won, but also, you know, his output at the highest level. If he didn't play for us, because we idolised, for our generation, we idolised Seedorf and Davids because they went through that Ajax team and they played all across the continent and they played for the great Dutch side, World Cups and all that kind of stuff. Genie, when his career's done, I think people from around the continent will view Genie Wijnaldum in the same sort of way. And we don't, because we weirdly do this at Liverpool, because I think we're a bit myopic at our own players. And we don't know how to play. Sort of some, most of us do, but some don't know how to place us contextually in world football. Because if Genie Wijnaldum was doing for Barcelona or Real Madrid or Bayern Munich or Juventus, what he'd done for Liverpool in the period that he's just done it, no one would have any doubt that he was one of the best midfielders on the planet. And every club would want it. And everyone would talk about him in far more excited terms. And that, you know, I think we do lose sight of that outside perspective sometimes. The fact that he's going to end up at Bayern Munich or Barcelona after leaving Liverpool, you know, look, Thiago's just made that kind of move to us. And Genie will make that kind of move almost in return, because that's the bracket of quality that Genie Wijnaldum's in. So yeah, it shouldn't get lost at all. We're gonna get some of the guys' memories from in a moment. We've got some super chats about Genie. Thank you so much. Stephen Price is gonna miss Genie. We'll go down a Liverpool legend. Philippe Hunt, I miss Genie. A lot of great servants to the club. The feeling of the end of the season reminds me of the end of 17-18. I'm confident if we make the right signings, we can win big. And we got one from Scott Hawks as well. Obviously just talking in a general sense, saying a third place finish means we can continue to build. Jürgen looks reborn. Thiago, Hendo, Fab in the middle. Curtis with the season to learn from all three. Love Genie. But we will not just manage, we'll thrive. Thanks as always. Thank you so much for that, Scott. Yeah, I think the thing for Genie Wijnaldum that stands out for me, Chris, there's the obvious one, it's the header for a start against Barcelona. I have never experienced a let off like that at a football match ever. Like the absolute explosion of emotion. So like for that forever, I will love Gini Wijnaldum. Rome away, another amazing one when he couldn't score away from home. Remember that was a thing? Yeah. He could only score at home, and then he goes and scores in the Olympico, the vital goal, as it was in the tie. But there's one for me that stands out, and it was we got to play against him and John Flanagan at Pez at the Anfield Club Store. And once it was done, Flano had to get off because he had like a family party to go to, and Gini just kind of hung around, and we beat them, and he was a bit upset that he didn't get to play like a rematch with us and all that kind of stuff. But after everything was getting packed away, he just hung around and chatted with us, and we had a walk around back to the cars with him and stuff. And he was just he's just a thoroughly lovely bloke.
It was just a normal conversation with a normal fella about life and football and everything, and it was mad, wasn't it? It was just that's my favourite memory of him, because he came across like just such a genuine bloke. And like, remember we were talking, and he's like, you know, I'm really falling. I preferred Newcastle and all that. The city he's talking about, not the fans and stuff. And we were like, well, where do you live? Was it Formby? Did he answer or something like that? I was like, you haven't lived in Liverpool, that's why. And he's like, you know, not a lot of us do anymore. And we were talking about our experience with Lucas, I think, because we were telling him about the Gini Wijnaldum conversation. I think that was the timeline, wasn't it? When we went to see Lucas, and Lucas was like, yeah, I always try to tell them, get into the city, move to the city first. You'll get a better understanding of the place. And unfortunately, I think with Kirby being where it is now, Formby's a really nice place for the players to go and stuff. But just having that conversation, and just like, we were walking around, weren't we? And all the cameras were following us, because like, they were obviously making sure that Gini was okay. And like, it was just a random, and then we got to his car, or we maybe got to our car, and he just stood there carrying on talking for another 5-10 minutes with us and stuff. And then he just got off. It was like 10:30, 11:00 at night.
Yeah.
But he was just so nice with us.
Just a brilliant fella. And yeah, it turned out he was mad into GTA 5, which was a nice level of conversation for a while and stuff. And yeah, I'd bump into him on a variety of things on tours and stuff, and he would always be like, oh, and come over and have a chat. I just, again, you know, he gave me some brilliant moments as a fan, but also professionally as well. Just, you know, if there was a mix zone, he'd always stop and have a word, and always catch up and always have, you know, and have a laugh and stuff. Yeah, so yeah, that's going to be sorely.
I remember him talking about his kids and how they just loved the Gini Wijnaldum song, and they'd sing it all the time and stuff like that. And you know, there's a lad who just loves it, you know what I mean? And yeah, we were lucky, man. But I mean, that was a good conversation, like, but it's nowhere near Barcelona, let's be honest.
Yeah. Emma, what's your favourite Gini Wijnaldum memory?
Yeah, probably a bit of a boring answer, but I guess it sums up the fact that he's just kind of an ever-present, and he's like, you know, he doesn't particularly score, you know, like the Steven Gerrard goals. He's just there in all the big moments. But I mean, it's Barcelona for me is obviously the one, because that was the time when Wijnaldum did do one of those Steven Gerrard moments. So it's got to be that. But I mean, aside from like him personally, when we won the Champions League, I was in Pop World in Liverpool, because I didn't get out to go to the game. And I remember us getting kicked out by the bouncers, and we were singing Si Señor on the staircase. But the last song that they played, I think, it could have been like the 20th last song. I was just so drunk that I thought it was the last song. But it was the Wijnaldum song, and everyone was just singing it, and it was like they eventually just kind of stopped the music, and everyone was just in like a kind of a mosh pit in Pop World singing the Wijnaldum song. So it is still probably one of my favourite songs. So that will always be in memory. But yeah, it's got to be Barca for me. And I think Van Dijk tweeted the picture of him. I can't remember whether Gini scored or Van Dijk scored, but where they're sort of looking at each other like that. I can't remember what game that was, but yeah, Van Dijk tweeted the picture the other day, and I think that's probably my favourite picture of Gini, is him and Van Dijk sort of having that like kind of Dutch teammate vibes, and he's just got the biggest smile on his face. So
amazing.
It'll be a sad day when we don't get to see him riding a bike in Evian or whatever they're going this year, isn't it? You know what I mean? Big smile on his face, like absolutely gutting.
Go on, Callum, what about you?
Yeah, I've got two random ones, actually. So his goal against Middlesbrough last game of the season, 16-17, because I think that kind of started everything for Jurgen Klopp and Liverpool. That was a catalyst for us achieving all the great stuff we've achieved over the last few years. But also, I don't know if you guys remember, I think it was the 18-19 season. We were chasing the league. We were playing against Cardiff, I believe it was. And he scored a goal directly, well, not directly, but from a corner. It was a rehearsed corner. I think Trent passed it and he came onto it and sort of lashed it in the back of the net. And I just remember his celebration. And it was almost like a primal lion roar. And you're just like, he loves this club and he really wants us to win stuff. It was not just a case of he's here just to be at Liverpool and collect stuff. And he actually wants us to win because he loves the club. And that was the moment where I was like, yeah, Genie really wants it for us.
Yeah, I mean, we've got Si Banstead here saying, for me, it's the goal versus Borough. Exactly what Callum says there, with that it kickstarted us on this whole journey over the last 4 years. So I think that's an absolutely brilliant point. The one we always talk about, but we haven't mentioned yet, Chris, is the header against Man City. Is that New Year's, the New Year's Eve one?
Yeah, it's the one. Yeah.
Like, what a night out that kickstarted, by the way, playing a game of footy on New Year's Eve. Like, I was in, we were going out for a meal afterwards, and I hit the Sambucas early that night. That's very rare for me to do, but like, all because we beat Man City, because Genie was absolutely amazing.
I had to work on New Year's Eve, so it wasn't a good night for me. I was fuming.
The question, I've seen this question asked, and I unfortunately, because of social media, you don't get tone, but I'm going to take it at face value. People asking, a lot of people I've seen asking the question, is he a Liverpool legend?
Yeah.
I completely agree. I saw one guy, I think it was in the Cop Connect Facebook group, and some guy saying, taking real umbrage with it, of saying like, no, Gerrard and Kenny and Souness or whatever are legends, Genie's not at that level. It's like, it's like having the world class arguments. It's like Cristiano Ronaldo and Messi have ruined the concept of what world class footballers are, because if you're not if you're not Lionel Messi, then you're not world class, because what else, what level is there above that? Liverpool legend for me is, you know, anyone, we've had to redefine it, because particularly our generation, Chris, we would call players legends, but they didn't have the silverware to back it up. You know, like Robbie Fowler's a Liverpool legend, but, you know, yeah, he is in the treble winning squad, but there's a point which he'd only won a League Cup for Liverpool prior to that. You know, there's plenty of players that we thought were amazing and haven't come close to the heights that anyone who's in this Liverpool squad has. And it's for me, Genie Wijnaldum. And so someone mentioned the fact that I'm talking about the Iniesta's Xavi stuff. And the point is not that I think he was better or whatever, but I hate these comparisons. If you're a regular midfielder in a team that's at the top of football, then you can stack alongside absolutely anyone, and I have no problem with calling someone a legend who plays in a legendary team.
And that's it, isn't it? For me, you can look at Kenny Dalglish, you can look at Steven Gerrard, and you know they're legends. And you get to the side.
They're legends of the game.
Yeah, well, you get to the side how you want to measure someone to be a legend. So I get to ignore the fact that Gerrard didn't win a Premier League because he was a legend, and I know how good he was, and I know how he deserved it, and he just didn't get it, unfortunately. But Gino Wijnaldum was one of the sides that A, wins the Premier League, B, wins the European Cup. It's the first Liverpool side to win the World Cup, for fuck's sakes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And if you can't be a legend when you were champions of the world as a club, what are you on?
Yeah.
Like, what more can you do in a club shirt than become champions of everything?
I mean,
that's what we did. Genie Wijnaldum was part of that.
No, I agree. You know, he mentioned that already. He scores the goal that gets us into the Champions League for the first time under Jurgen Klopp. He scores basically the winning goal in the semi-finals of the Champions League in 17-18 the following season. He scores the vital... He scores the vital goals at Anfield in the semi-finals against Barcelona. He's got and a handful here and there of absolute stand-up moments. He plays centre forward in the Nou Camp because Bobby Firmino's injured. He goes to play in a back three away at Brighton when we're having a massive injury crisis at one point during this. Like, I'm sorry, but like, and I know that some people take umbrage because they like to split it. These are the same people who lose their shit over when you give someone an 8 rating instead of a 9 rating, or a 7 instead of, you know, pedants. is the point. But, you know, I think about the list of people who are Liverpool legends who will go down in Liverpool history, and not just for cult hero reasons. He was there. He played in all the big games, all the big moments.
When we discuss this team in 15, 20 years' time, we'll be talking about Trent Alexander-Arnold, we'll be talking about Mo Salah, and there'll always be one person who won't let it go. there was Jordan Henderson and Gini Wijnaldum and Fabinho in the middle making sure that they could go and do their job. Because there always is. There's just one fella that remembers more about it and he has that understanding of it. And they won't let it go because, and you do it now. Like you mentioned Ronnie Whelan not that long ago. He's not one of those names that you pick out from that side, but there's always one fella that has to make you aware that he was a big part of it. Steve Nichol did a job for that side and all this type of stuff. Yeah. That's what football is. It's a team game and you can only become the best if you're the best team.
We've got some breaking news. Fabrizio Romano has just tweeted, Gini Wijnaldum is set to join Barcelona as a free agent until June 2024. There's nothing agreed with Bayern. He wants to sign for Barca. Last details and here we go soon. So there you go. Gini Wijnaldum could be on his way to Barcelona. And look, the problem is, of course, if you decide that you've got something for some reason, you're just odd and you've got some issue with Gini Wijnaldum, you'll go, oh, because Barcelona are not the team, blah, 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 blah.
He's Dutch, you don't go, and he wants to play for Barcelona. You don't, they all want to play for Barcelona if you're Dutch.
Yeah, you know, honestly, and again, you've just got to put us in context. If we're taking any of Bayern Munich's midfielders to Liverpool, we would be made up. And if we took any of the top, when Barcelona were the top team, were the top handful of teams in the world, and we took any of the midfields, same with Man City, same with any of these teams, that's a massive signing for Barcelona. Signing for Barcelona. And you know, and the point that comes next, Carl, is that it's what do Liverpool do next from Gini Wijnaldum? Because I think we're gonna miss him. We are going to miss him. And, you know, there'll be plenty of games where Gini Wijnaldum wasn't a superstar on the pitch, and maybe some of the things he does go under the radar. But when we come back to that longevity, that availability thing, having a guy who you can throw into any game situation on almost any position on the field is something that, you know, we might find that we're a little short on if we don't do sensible business this summer.
Yeah, just hearing that news about Gini, it actually hurts.
There was a proper sigh when Paul was talking.
I just know he's going to go there and improve them. And as sadistic as it sounds, I kind of wanted to see Barca go through the ringer for a little bit, because other clubs through it. But he'll go and improve them. In terms of us, I don't know if you can directly replace Gini Wijnaldum. I think you've just got to get different players. And I think that's because he can do so many things. He can play as a 6, he can play as an 8, he can play as a 10. You can start him for a game and know that you'll be good. You can start him in massive games and know you'll be good. You can bring him off the bench when you need to close out a game and know that you're good. I don't think that I can think of one player off the top of my head in world football who's available that you can go and get, who can do that, plus guarantee you to play 35 out of 38 games this season as well. I think you may have to go and get 2 centre midfielders to cover the loss of Gini Wijnaldum, if I'm going to be honest, because unfortunately Keita and Ox, because of their injuries or because of form, they can't be relied upon. And then you're back down to Thiago, Henderson and Fabinho. Henderson, for as much as I love the guy, he needs to have his minutes managed a little bit this season in particular because of the injuries he's had. Thiago's still getting using Fabinho, we've seen him break down sometimes with injuries. So I think we need 2 centre midfielders, one who's slightly more defensive and one who's slightly more attacking.
Yeah, absolutely. Rizwan Ali says here, Klopp summed it up perfectly post-match. Gini came in as a top-class player, leaves a world-class player and a Liverpool legend. Could have missed the Brexit midfield. Stefan Valerio says, had a Kula legend for the 2005 Champions League, right, Paul?
How did he get in a Brexit midfield? It doesn't make any sense. It's never made any sense to me.
Neither a work permit. Jokes aside, love the channel. You guys make us fans feel connected, even from Australia. Well, the point is that, look at it, people hold up all kinds of players, not Istanbul team, but this is what I'm talking about. Context is that team was a flash in the pan. So we had a lot of rubbish players in that team. So you know, that team is legendary for that game. But in terms of when we realised this Liverpool team over the last, I was saying this to Kenny Dalglish today. Just in casual conversation.
Name
with you. We've realised this team has shown me how crap all the teams I've supported are over the Premier League era. Because what we've got now is the closest thing to the teams my dad grew up supporting in the 70s and 80s. Because there's levels, and that's the thing we've had to redefine. We've redefined the lads we've got in this team now stand shoulder to shoulder with all the guys from the 80s and the 70s, as far as I'm concerned.
Like that,
and then
that
it's outstanding individuals in between that who, may, who, you know, like, again, like Gerard and Carragher and hippies, etc. Sorry, Emma.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say that was exactly what I was thinking. I was like, I'm 27 and this is by far the best Liverpool side of my lifetime. So if I can't say that the most ever-present midfielder in the best Liverpool team of my lifetime isn't a legend, then what the hell is a legend? Like, it's a no-brainer for me. And I don't think you can cap the number of legends there is. Like, Liverpool are a club. It's like, yeah, it's like we're blessed to have so many amazing players. And just because they're not all Steven Gerrard or Kenny Dalglish doesn't mean you can't have, you know, another 50 legends. Like, it's fine. You can have a lot of legends. It's okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
I tell you what, I mean, I know Liverpool have done that 100 players who shook the cop. But Gini Wijnaldum's goal, if you were just ranking it on actually the cop shaking against Barcelona, probably shook it more than anyone previously.
Yep, you'll never take that away from any of us. Genuinely, the greatest goal, and reaction to it. I mean, almost in the history of Liverpool Football Club, it was just sensational. Gini Wijnaldum gave that to us, and we'll never ever lose that. Just briefly, then, you know, we're going to be looking ahead to the summer now. It's done, a few days of respite. The podcast will be taking a week or so's break while we recharge our batteries, but there's plenty of content going to be going out on the redmentv.com. It looks like, Chris, that Ibrahima Konate is going to be the first in the door. Fabrizio Romano said that, you know, personal terms have been agreed for a while. We know Liverpool don't hang around. They like to get as much business done early, and I think this season's going to be, I think they're going to aim to go back to what they've done.
Yeah.
Particularly for centre-halves.
Well, it makes perfect sense. You know, we've seen, I think, how desperate we needed centre-halves. You know, I'd still like us to sign Kabak as well as Konate if the money's there. I think there's going to be a signing for probably the midfield and the attack. I think there's going to be one for every sort of level. I'm not sure what we do with a backup goalkeeper this season, but that might not be a bad shout as well. Obviously, you know, you want to get your prices in before the price of the European players goes up after the Euros, because they always double in price if someone has a good season and stuff like that. So that's important. Also, the players being away and not with their agents and all that type of stuff makes it more difficult to then get someone in before pre-season. We know how much Klopp loves having his full squad there for pre-season. So I expect Liverpool will have been working hard on these deals and any other deals that come through to get them through the door. But it's going to be a busy first few weeks, I think, before the Euros start. And then once that, it'll go quiet, and if there's any other business that we might be able to pick up, maybe.
Exactly, yeah, I think that's it. I think there'll be some initial business, Callum, that needs to be done. So, you know, Konate, it looks like it'll be a release fee kind of thing that just needs to be boxed. That might well be done by the end of the week. There'll be a couple of other bits and pieces, but I think you'll find the essentials get done, and then a lot of it then will be circumstantial, seeing who are able to move out and what kind of revenue we can generate. But it's kind of encouraging, and maybe it's just something that's going to get us all disappointed, but there are quite a lot of rumours circulating around Liverpool having a chunk there to go and buy someone a bit special if we need to. I guess we'll all kind of believe it when we see it.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm expecting Haaland, Sancho, Mbappe and Messi to join this summer. I don't think that's even being spoilt. No, I'm joking, obviously. I think you're right. I think there's a difference between finding players. I think signing the essential players, I think everyone knows we need a centre-back. We've needed a centre-back at the moment. Lovren left. We needed one when Lovren was here. So getting Konate through the door is big. Whether we get a second centre-back or not remains to be seen. Me being a Liverpool fan and being quite a spoiled Liverpool fan, I do want a second centre-back, but I'd understand if we didn't and if Matip stayed for one more season. I think, obviously, a Gini replacement is essential. I'd actually go down the route of a third-choice goalkeeper as opposed to a second-choice goalkeeper, because I think Kelleher's kind of proved himself that he can step up as a deputy for Alisson, in my personal opinion. And then an attacker. I think we need an attacker this summer, whether it be a killer striker or someone versatile across the front three.
That goalkeeper stuff's really interesting, actually. I've not really thought of it that way, but what you want to replace is Adrian's character. You want someone who's just actually a big, you know, sort of gregarious, sort of kind of a bit larger than life thing. I mean, you know, what Pepe Reina would do, who, if you have to drop them in, maybe they've lost something in spring and agility or whatever, but just having them, your goalkeepers need to have a bit of that. You need to have a bit of personality if you're not going to play it, or if you're not very good, you need to make up with it in personality. And it gives Kelleher a bit of space. I think that's really interesting. Emma, what would you be doing?
Yeah, very similar. I agree with Callum. I think Kelleher's fine as a backup. I wouldn't be too bogged down with the goalkeeper situation. Centre back, I agree with Chris. I'd like to see Kanate and Cabot come in, but again, I'd be happy with one of them. Midfielders, yeah, absolutely need to replace Wijnaldum. I'm quite keen on Yves Bissouma, just because, you know, I think he's consistent. He's got good ball retention. I think he'd be a decent buy. And I want an out-and-out goal-scoring striker, you know, somebody who plays in a similar way to Harry Kane, although obviously I'm not expecting a Harry Kane to come in. But because I think with Jota, Mane, Salah and Firmino, we've kind of got the versatile sort of front three, but I think we need an out-and-out, you know, striker. So that's why.
Interesting stuff. Asylum Escapees upgraded to Wonder Kids and here on YouTube membership. So throughout the season, the bonus show for Wonder Kid and Cult Heroes has been the Monday Final Word Show. It will be the Reds transfer roundup show throughout the summer, which we'll be doing for you guys. That, as well as a whole host of other brilliant extra content, is available on the RedmenTV.com, our Liverpool streaming service. We've done Keeps Alone, arguably the most hungover show ever, yesterday, two-part special, so that'll be coming out. We're going to be doing season reviews today. We're going to be doing season ratings for the players in a massive set of shows as well, and we've got loanee reports from at the moment almost everyone who have noticed who went out on loan, but we'll see how we get on with them. But they're coming as well, some really great insight from fans, journalists and actually a manager as well, who's managed one of the players down the pyramid. So that's all going to be going out over the next couple of weeks on the RedmenTV.com. So yeah, it doesn't end from us, even though we are taking a little bit of a break on the podcast. So make sure you get your Liverpool fix by subscribing to the website. And of course, don't forget, Hendo 10 Years of Red is coming. It is coming very soon. There'll be a full trailer for that coming in the next week as well. So keep your eyes peeled for that. Perfect time to sign up and keep you guys going in a Liverpool this summer. And hopefully we can all enjoy the Euros. The Liverpool involvement in the England squad will be known very shortly. We'll be doing a bit of a reaction to that if the inevitable happens with Trent, so make sure you subscribe to the YouTube channel. But yes, thank you so much for joining us this season. It's been an absolute shit show, to be perfectly honest, but everyone managed to pull it out and leave us smiling at the end, so that's absolutely fine. Thank you so much to Emma and to Callum. Do check out Team Coppish on YouTube as well, as guys have been doing some brilliant live streams. I'm sure they have plenty lined up for the summer.
Sorry to cut you as well. Shout out to you guys as well, man. You guys have done brilliant this season. Always top content. We've and you grinded
survived.
Out. Nah, you did brilliant. Brilliant. Shout out to you guys, man.
Thanks, Callum.
Shout out to the BBC as well, Emma.
Yeah.
Thanks, mate.
Emma, have you got any nice words to say about us before we go?
Pathetic. Pathetic. Chris looks better than he did yesterday. I'll say that.
It's true. It's because his top's not quite as figure hugging as the top I was wearing yesterday. I felt like something from the friggin' Mushroom Kingdom yesterday.
We were poured into those shirts yesterday. Yeah. Absolutely.
What's them little the brown? Yeah, whatever.
Whatever. If you want to see Chris's lovely cushioned lobs, then check out our Instagram account. Absolutely phenomenal stuff from playing at the pitch. But yeah, that is us. Thank you guys. Thank you so much for joining us for this season. You're all amazing. Thank you so much to Jeannie Wijnaldum, Jurgen Klopp, the Liverpool squad. And for all the people who've been wonderful and joined us on this journey, particularly the guys over on the RedmenTV.com, the lifeblood of Redmen TV. Hope to see you guys over there. Don't forget to get your Alisson and or Nat Phillips just headed t-shirts on redmenmerch.com. And yeah, we'll be back with the podcast in a few weeks time. Love you guys. Have a good summer.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. You can even save time by going from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds. Join the 96% of Grammarly users that say it helps them craft more impactful writing. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.